Another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I am your host, Allison with a Y, here with my co-hosts, Allison with an I.
Hey, guys.
And Patrick.
Hello.
And this week we had The Wheel of Death, and The Wheel of Death chose the movie Susuk for us. And Susuk is Susuk kind of sounds like a Simlish word. Anyways, Susuk is a 2023 Indonesian possession film. Following
you mean a 2023 Simlish film?
Did I say Simlish?
No, I'm making a joke.
Oh, what is Simlish? What does Simlish mean?
It's the language they speak on The Sims.
Because they don't speak, so they just like make sort of nonsense noises at each other.
But it's a whole language.
I love it.
Susuk. Anyways. Back on track.
We got to work some jokes into this discussion because this movie's a lot.
Oh, boy. Susuk is a 2023 Indonesian possession film following estranged sisters Laras and Ayu. Laras, a sex worker, is brutally attacked by one of her clients and beaten almost to death. Hospitalized after the assault, she begins to show bizarre signs of possession. Ayu, another, recognizes this as possible effects of susuk, tiny needles that Laras has embedded under her skin to make her more beautiful, as many Southeast Asian women do in real life. As traditional medical care fails to provide any solutions for Laras' condition, Ayu and Laras' driver, Arman, take Laras back to the sister's rural home village to try to exorcise her by shamanic practices. Another possession film, but like culturally different from the possession films that we typically think of when we think of possession films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you're going to watch this as a Western viewer, look up what Susuk is first, mm-hmm. because, you know, it's made by Indonesians for, I presume, an Indonesian audience, and there's no real explanation of what this is, and I got a decent amount into the movie being like, oh, they're going to explain this at some point, and then we finally looked it up, and yeah, it's... And that's cool. I appreciated that about it, that it introduced me to this thing that I had never heard of, these sort of like acupuncture-esque little needles that people insert into their skin and leave them there. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah. I didn't look it up. I just figured it out, I guess. Mm, but I kind of liked that they didn't explain it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes sense, especially for, yeah, again, the audience that it was primarily intended for, but... Yeah, it's definitely a take on a possession movie that I had never seen before, mm-hmm. which I welcome, especially in that genre, because holy shit, you know, maybe the most repeated tropes of any genre is possession movies.
Yeah.
So in your research of Susuk, this is a thing. This is a real thing in Indonesia. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In Southeast Asia.
Ooh, folklore.
It's just a real thing, and sometimes they're considered little talismans that you and they're just little metal needles basically that you keep under the skin, but some people use it because they think it'll make them more beautiful. Other people use it to relieve pain or help with, like, I think I read, like, spiritual issues as well. It's like a whole host of things.
Mm-hmm. But it was really taboo in the movie, right? The village that she went to, their home kind of village, was like, oh, you used susuk, so get out of here.
Yeah.
Because of that.
I think some of that is related to religious context, because I think from what I read in Islam, susuk is considered haram. And There's a huge Muslim population in Indonesia, I believe. I hope I'm not talking out my ass too much here.
Seems like it.
I think that's correct. And so I think some of the like stigma associated with it in this movie was related to that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, I mean, this movie is doing a lot of interesting stuff kind of around women's role in society, around sex work, around slut shaming. And, you know, I think limited cultural context, I think, makes it a little hard to understand exactly the metaphor they're going for with the Susuk. I don't know. I'm curious, you know, like kind of how you guys read it, because I feel like there's a reading where the Susuk is kind of like this self-harming thing that she's done to try and be beautiful according to society. But also there is so much stigma associated with it by characters who we're otherwise not supposed to agree with, I think. Because I feel like this movie is actually like surprisingly pro-sex work.
Yeah.
I kind of read the Susuk as being sort of, in her case, in Laris's case, it was used to enhance her beauty. I thought it was like how they treated it was kind of like how they treat sex work. And it was like only, the thought was like only a sex worker would get Susuk, which is what makes it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And she got it for impure reasons.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I read it, though.
I kind of looked at it like the way people would look at like cosmetic surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, you know, one could make an argument that cosmetic surgery is used by women who have low self-esteem or who need to feel more beautiful because they're not, you know, like finding their self-love. But there could also be a case made that like people that are very pro, like I can do what I want with my body because it's my body and I am, you know, destigmatizing anti-aging techniques and things like that. I don't know. I got the same vibe about Susuk that I do with cosmetic surgery or cosmetic like treatments. And mostly that came from that scene between the sisters where, so Ayu is a makeup artist, which is really kind of ironic because what Ayu is doing with makeup, Laris is doing with Susuk. And Ayu this whole time is promoting like, you are beautiful. You can be beautiful from the inside out. Because Laris is talking about like, well, why do you use makeup if we could just put Susuk in, you know, your skin and be more beautiful? So it seems to me the conversation is pretty lighthearted around it. And it comes down to like, well, this is just a personal choice, much like getting Botox or like chemical peels or something.
Yeah. And yet also the Susuk is very much, I don't think there's any ambiguity in the movie about the fact that it is actually the source of the possession and what's happening to her, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they offer up another idea.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's where my kind of, like, bit of confusion comes from on what exactly it's trying to do here. Because I don't... Are you guys with me that it didn't seem like it was shaming her for being a sex worker? Like the movie textually was not shaming her for being a sex worker?
I didn't feel like the movie was. I certainly feel like obviously the village.
So certainly the characters were, but I think you're supposed to be on her side and think that it's like okay for her to be a sex worker.
Yeah, I think you're supposed to definitely be empathetic to her.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And it was something that seemed like it was more popularized, widely accepted in like big cities like Jakarta than it was in the little village. But yeah, no, it felt very pro kind of sex work to me, which I loved. Like that was surprising and refreshing.
I mean, honestly, you very, 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 very rarely see a movie that treats it as matter-of-factly as this does. And with there's no sex scenes, you know, so often, like if a sex worker is in a movie, even if it's like a pro sex work movie, you're gonna see a scene of somebody fucking because like there's still this fascination with the kind of, you know, titillating element that people perceive in that line of work. But this is just like yeah, she's a sex worker, deal with it.
Like, that's her job. That was portrayed as her work, which, yeah, cool.
The only thing you see her doing with a client is her shitty-ass aggressive client beating her almost to death.
Mm-hmm. Politician, no less.
Yeah. But, yeah, so anyways, I have some confusion about, yeah, I guess just what it was trying to say about Susuk. Yeah, I guess that's a period. I thought I had more to say there, but I just had some confusion about what it was trying to say about the Susuk.
I think the first time that we see Susuk in relationship to, like you were saying earlier, Patrick, this is the cause of her possession, is when she's got the like MRI of her brain.
Yeah.
And there are what looks to be like little toothpicks stuck in there. And the kind of Western medicine doctor says she's got all these broken bones and collapsed lung, whatever, whatever. And that I can treat. But this, and he like shows us the MRI scan, is like out of my realm of, to imply like this is a spiritual thing. This is not Western medicine. I can't handle this. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was that first moment for me anyway, where I was like, oh, okay, something's going on that is supernatural or whatever.
Yeah. 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 While I don't quite profess to know exactly what it was trying to say about the Susuk in particular, and I don't necessarily fault the movie for that. I think it's more just like my lack of kind of cultural context, but I did find this, I don't know, pretty interesting overall. These two lead characters are actually pretty strong, I thought, and decently performed. There was some solid chemistry between the two actors. And, you know, especially when you get flashbacks to their past experiences together, because Laris is just in a fucking possession coma for most of the movie.
Yeah.
So you get a few flashbacks to their past experiences before this assault happened. And they do a really nice job of giving you a sense of a tender, kind of playful, loving sibling relationship before they had this falling out.
I really liked them showing that, so you really got to have more emotional investment, especially on behalf of Ayu, who, I mean, clearly they had kind of had some challenges in their relationship more recently, but getting to see that sisterly bond was very, for me, very emotionally effective.
Yeah. I was super surprised how much I followed this movie without understanding all the cultural particularities. It was one of the first foreign movies that we've watched as a podcast together that I have felt like I followed it just as easily as I would if it were in English and of a culture that I'm more familiar with.
Yeah, I had a pretty similar experience to it, where I was surprised how much the beginning in particular really like hooked me in. And I felt like it was pretty easy for me to understand what was happening. I normally really struggle a lot. I struggle a lot more with the foreign films, obviously, because there's like the, you can't listen to it so much. You have to really read it and all of that. But yeah, this one was surprisingly easy to follow. And it was engaging. I thought it was really engaging.
And I thought the actor that played Ayu was amazing. Like,
yeah.
She was just really captivating. She was very understated. I didn't feel like she was acting, you know, like overacting. And I think that's probably a testament to the writing and the acting, but I really appreciated her in this movie. I was like, I hope this girl's got other roles, because she's really good.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, very naturalistic performance. And also this guy, Arman, who we mentioned in the synopsis, you know, kind of a more of a supporting character, supporting role to both the sisters. But, you know, especially once Laris is in the hospital, he's kind of Ayu's main, like, companion, I guess, through this whole experience. And that I also thought was a strong, fairly natural performance. I don't know, performances in this kind of surprised me all around.
Yeah,
I agree.
Same.
Quality acting in this, actually.
Yeah,
all around. And it wasn't like there weren't a lot of, I guess there were a handful of smaller roles, but there were only a few kind of leads. And it didn't seem like this movie had a big budget. I don't know how it would have. It seems like they did a lot with a little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's, you know, fairly simple story and fairly simple production overall, but they did. They accomplished a decent amount with that. Do you guys find it scary?
I thought it was scary. I thought that some of the possession scenes were really well done. Like, again, surprised me. Some of the, like, creepy moving around that Laris did, some of the makeup, some of the couple little twists. I was really surprised by, you know, I don't really get scared, but I could see objectively that that this movie was scary.
Mm-hmm.
Well done.
Yeah, it was kind of scary, not in a supernatural way necessarily for me, but in the them being in this village where all of these people like kind of have this idea of who they are and whether they deserve to be there or not.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of that like helplessness of that, like that was probably like the scarier part for me. And I think that lent a lot to the atmosphere of it. Like there was good, like spooky atmosphere, but that was really what was the scary part for me.
Like the mob mentality.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. There's this like gang of, I think pretty much exclusively young men in the movie who are, you know, have their preconceived notions about Laris in particular and are pretty hostile to Ayu and Laris's presence in the village and are either trying to run them out of the village or just take advantage of their situation one way or another.
Those fucking kids.
Dude.
Yeah.
But the exorcism, quote exorcism scenes, those were definitely creepy.
Yeah, and I mean, creepy in particular because, again, this gives us some stuff that I haven't necessarily seen. You know, there's one scene where, like, Laris and the exorcist, because there are technically, like, actually kind of a couple of exorcists,
like two of them
in this movie. Yeah. First one doesn't fare too well. but anyways, there's a scene where Laris and the exorcist are kind of like dancing around each other on the floor like cats almost. They're like wrestling and kind of like leaping at each other.
I loved it.
Wild and yeah, kind of just uncanny type of creepy.
Mm-hmm.
But like kung fu sparring, like
animals fighting in the wild, you know.
Yeah. That was cool and weird. There's also just like kind of some good body horror stuff in this. I mean, this happens a lot of times where someone is like pushing and pinching her skin to like push these susuk out of her. And you know, maybe that's done one or two times too many, but it's good ass body horror shit. And also it's good ass body horror shit when her like skin, her face just becomes, you know, increasingly more just blistered and bloody and whatever from people trying to get these things out of her over the course of the movie. It's gross and it's harrowing, you know. It's not like the gloopy fun kind of body horror, and it's not the pure exploitative kind of like Saw body horror. It just feels fairly visceral and real in a kind of upsetting way.
Yeah.
I feel like I was counting how many susuk they were taking out of her. I was like, make sure you get them all, because there were like 7 or 8 on the MRI. And so I was like looking forward to them taking these out of her skin, because I was like, get them all, you know?
Yeah.
Extract them.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. A few times they talk about how like she's like, quote, alive, but she's also like decaying.
She's rotting,
Yeah, you can see that slow process. I mean, it's not super dramatic, but the way her skin color is changing, mm-hmm. and particularly around like her orifices, the skin is becoming more rotten and damaged around those, which is the normal decaying process. That's mm-hmm. where it starts. And that's really cool body horror that like I prefer that body horror other than just like straight up gore.
Yeah.
But it was very well done, and it was like pretty, it was a very gradual thing throughout the film, and very, very well done. Whoever the makeup artist was on set for this, the makeup designer, great, great work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When it came to that.
Totally agreed. It was subtle, and it felt like you said, it was gradual, and I was even looking for it. Like, okay, continuity wise, not like I wanted to catch them doing something wrong, but at no point was I like, oh, come on. Like, yeah. did anything stand out to me as like too much or not enough? It just felt right on the nose.
Yeah. It feels like the more we're talking about this, the more it feels like there was just a lot of care put into this film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was very intentional.
I think so.
Very good eye for detail when it comes to the acting and the design and the makeup, and yeah.
I agree.
If I've got to complain about this, the only thing is it feels a little baggy in the middle. When they get to the village, it stalls out a little bit to me. It feels like they're kind of bouncing from character to character, and you know, Exorcist this and Mr. Damar that, and it felt a little little limp for a stretch there, but it starts and ends hard.
Yeah.
And we won't talk about what exactly happens in the ending, but god fucking damn it was bleak.
Oh god.
I like honestly one of the darkest endings I've seen for a movie on this podcast. And I did not think that's where it was going to wind up. So I guess you've been warned. These are not specific spoilers, but if you're thinking about seeing Sisuk, you've been warned that the ending is dark.
Yeah. I'm kind of dying to know what you guys, how you would rate it.
Yeah, we might as well, because there's kind of a couple big twists here that feel a little impossible to continue talking around at this point.
Yeah, there's definitely like spoiler room stuff I want to discuss. All right, so before we go to the spoiler hut, let's rate it. We'll start with you, Patrick. What would you rate this movie? View it, cue it, or screw it?
I'll give it a view it. It might be a slightly low view it. Because again, this did lose some momentum for me in the middle. And I think also, again, this is not the movie's fault. I think it's more lack of cultural understanding. But I still can't say I fully grasped the thesis on Sisuk itself. Not as in the title of the movie, but the actual things, what it was trying to say about that practice. And kind of how that metaphorically fit into the rest of the narrative here. But surprisingly strong otherwise. And the kind of themes that I did take away from it, I thought were pretty powerful and heavy. And I thought it was pretty well executed for, you know, again, as we said, probably not the biggest budget in the world and a pretty simple concept. I think they did quite a bit with, you know, probably little to begin with. So yeah, view it. Allison with an I. View it, cue it, or screw it.
I am also a view it, which kind of surprised me. I didn't know what to think, but coming off of Bram Stoker's Dracula, I was like, this is going to be really hard to follow, like we said in the last episode. And it, of course, isn't the same at all, but totally a view it. Took me by surprise. I just felt really intrigued by the story. I felt super, super attached to Ayu. Like, she gave such good little sister energy, and I really cared about her. I really cared about Armon. I cared about the characters, you know. I thought it was written really well. I thought it was acted well. We talked about the makeup. there were some genuinely spooky scenes for me. I was delighted actually watching this movie. It went by really fast. And I was kind of like, wow, fuck yeah, Wheel of Death. You did a good one.
Yeah.
I'm a view it too. Allison with a Y.
I have to give it a high cue it. I wanted to give it a view it, but the end was too fucking depressing for me. I really struggled with that. And I think I was a view it up until the very end. Not that it did anything wrong. It's just like, hey, here's this movie that is really fascinating, has a really interesting premise, but you're going to feel horrible by the end. And I don't know if I can, in good conscience, can tell somebody that they need to watch that when I know it's going to do nothing but be a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
Like a very well done bummer, but a big bummer nonetheless. So high cue it. But if you want to be bummed out, go for it. I won't stop you.
Yeah, I mean, and I think part of it is, yeah, and we're about to get into it in the spoiler room, so this is going to be vague. But I think part of the struggle with the ending that I can kind of agree with what you're saying on, even though like I vibed with it in general, I think there's a little bit of, did it need to be that bleak at the end? What was it trying to say with that ending? And we're going to talk about it more in just a minute in the spoiler room.
Yeah. But
I think, even though I guess I appreciated the ending for its bleakness, there is some question of why.
Mm. Yeah. What was the purpose of all of this happening?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. And that's exactly where it lost me.
Yeah.
But up until that, it's a really solid film.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, before we go to the spoiler hut, you can check out our website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. You can find our links to our merch there, buy some merch. Maybe someday we'll have some new merch for you too. That we'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
You can also check us out on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, YouTube. Amoncast, EHMONcast, or TikTok, Amon Podcast. And then you can also find the link to our Discord server where you can join us. And if you've seen this movie, also, tell us if you would view it or cue it or screw it. I would love to know that, how other people feel about this. And finally, find us on your podcast listening platform of choice and give us a little review. Review it, you know.
my brain is doing a thing right now. When you said EHMON cast, you hit the N in a way that made me turn it into an M, and I was like, it would be funny if there was like a like Amon subculture of Amon fans who were mothers and called themselves Amoms.
Okay, if you're an Amom, definitely join our Discord server. We can start a whole
special channel
thread for you.
Yeah.
I'm an A-mom.
Yeah. Allison with an I is the original A-mom.
I am the original. I'm the first inaugural A-mom. I'll leave the Discord. Fine, I'll do it.
All right, we're gonna scoot on down to the
the A-mom club, A-mom fan club. Spoiler: A-mom offices.
That offices. Let's go,
Esquire.
The spoiler A-mom minivan.
Oh my god.
Welcome back. We've taken the A-mom minivan to the spoiler hut.
Really, oh, that's such an insane sentence.
And Well, we already alluded to this earlier, but the first shaman trying to deal with the susuk gets murked.
And listen, I was excited for this shaman when they first introduced this shaman. I think Mr. Ramat or Raman, I forget. I think it was Ramat was his name. I got excited. I was like, this sounds like this character is going to have big J energy.
Yes, you did.
Oh my God, I thought the same thing.
And no, he really doesn't. And then he gets got real fast.
So fast.
But for those of us that were keeping count, he did get rid of some of the susuk, which presumably there were only a limited number of them. So he kind of got the process started. I appreciated his character because he was no match for the demon, but he gave it a fucking real college try. And poor dude was,
Yeah, and from there, we bring in this other guy who winds up serving in an exorcist role, and he is specifically a susuk expert, which I thought was interesting.
And they found him online, which I was like, this guy could be a total sham. Like, I was prepared to have them get totally got by some, you know, fake whatever witch doctor. But he was a badass motherfucker.
He wasn't as badass as I wanted him to be. I wound up wanting him to be Jay too, and he was not quite Jay to me.
That is so funny that we were all looking to award the spirit of Jay for this one movie, independent of one another. You didn't think he was as badass as you wanted him to be.
Yeah. I mean, he was fine. He wasn't, like, lame or anything. I don't know. I mean, fundamentally, I just wanted something different out of him than what the movie was actually doing. I don't remember that guy's name, and it probably doesn't matter.
It was... I remember. It was Praz.
Oh, Praz. Yes. Yeah.
And I remembered because I wanted to award him the spirit of Jay, and then I was like, I have to remember his name.
Well, spoilers for this year's Spirit of Jay Award.
Well, now I feel like I can't because he wasn't cool enough for Patrick.
Hey, you know, it's all extremely
your own interpretation.
It's extremely subjective. There have been some Spirit of Jay picks that
Mr. Bonku,
yeah.
That will always be the funniest thing I've maybe ever heard.
It was pretty good.
I kind of liked that this demon was no match for them. Like, that surprised me. Like, I for sure thought, and we've talked about this bleak, sad ending, but I kind of liked the idea that, like, this demon just kept winning. I mean, I couldn't believe how many people this fucking demon, Laura's demon, killed everybody.
This demon was winning so much, it was getting tired of winning.
Oh, God. Thanks, I hate it.
But yeah, our spoilers that kind of lead us towards this very bleak ending are mostly kind of related to the family history. We've got this village elder, Mr. Damar, who kind of has flitted in and out since they returned to the village. And basically, Ayu ends up finding out that there's some parallels between her and Laris's mother, who is now dead, and Laris's experience. So the mom was not a sex worker, but was, you know, treated as a quote-unquote whore by the village because she had these two girls by two different fathers. Which, actually, I forget the explanation for that, but she wasn't even sleeping around, right? Didn't she thought the one guy was dead or something like that?
I don't remember, but the men in the village were absolutely enamored with her. Everybody wanted to marry her.
Yeah.
And I think she married, like, a wealthy man, but...
had, like, a torrid affair with someone else.
Yeah.
But she was beautiful because she was also using susuk.
Yes.
Right.
Allegedly, yes.
And then
allegedly beautiful because of that.
Right, right.
And then ended up having the same possession issue as
Laris.
And Mr. Damar reveals that he is Ayu's father. Mm-hmm. He was the, you know, the other man. back in the day.
Which was really touching. Like, that moment to me was well really played. Sweet. Yeah. Like, Mr. DeMars, I really cared for him. You know, he was a sweet, sweet man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was surprised by how much that really touched me, too, and how, like, quickly I felt that emotional bond mm-hmm. between him and IU. And I mean, and his acting was really great, too, because, you know,
yeah,
it was played so subtly and with, like, this sense of shame, but also, like, the whole time, you can look back in all of his interactions with her, there's this tenderness and there is this care. And it is not, it's not overplayed. It's just like clearly from a man who's has shame, but then a deep sense of caring. So well done. Very, very,
and like he's
heart tugging.
Honored, honored to protect her, you know? Like he knows that fucking Rufio and his gang are going to elder abuse kill him. Like, what the fuck was that guy's fucking problem?
Rufio. Oh,
and at least Rufio had, you know, redemption arc. This fucking guy, I was like, that dude is a fucking nuisance and a murderer. Yeah. And all of his friends are like, whoa, you crossed the line after he kills her dad. And it's like, well, you guys were all beating the shit out of him. And then he stabbed him to death.
I don't even understand. Okay, here's one of my beefs with this film is I don't really understand that plot point with that guy and that gang.
They were fucking incels, dude.
Right.
Laris rejected him and he never got over it.
And it's like, I it was just like something that I didn't feel like was necessary to the story for emotional impact.
Well, yeah. I think it's creating a parallel to the way that the mom was treated back in the day. Yeah. And then it's also kind of demonstrating the particularly conservative and misogynistic attitudes towards these characters in their hometown.
True. That's fair.
Yeah, I thought this film was like, I don't know, accidentally kind of woke, but maybe not accidentally kind of woke, and that they really, I think these plot lines sort of, like we said earlier about Laris's sex work, it was just portrayed as her work. It, like you said, Patrick, it wasn't exploited for, like, you know, gratuitous sex scenes or anything like that. And then these boys, this group of boys, were portrayed as truly like what I think we've come to know as modern incel culture, where it's just like no women will give them the time of day. So they resent all women for it. And they think that they deserve, you know, the prettiest woman. And this really beautiful woman, Laris, was really beautiful. She left this village and made a name for herself and was an independent woman with a career in the city. And I don't know. I was like really sort of, again, surprised by how this touched on some themes that I think are pretty topical here and now or globally, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. like kind of accidentally woke, which I was like, cool.
I think intentionally woke.
Yeah. Okay.
Although, you know, again, I'm still kind of a bit puzzled by what it's doing with the Susuk specifically, but as woke as the rest of it is, I feel like that is also has similar intentions. But it turns out the mom was buried in, and help me out here because I didn't fully understand this, but the mom was buried in a cage, right?
That's the terminology they used in the translation, at least.
That was mm-hmm. supposed to prevent the demon from getting out or something.
Mm-hmm. Or or like at least keep the body in there that mm-hmm. had the demon, because the demon was housed in the body.
Right.
So she was...
Because the mom lost the battle with the demon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was a woman, another shamanic woman, who has since passed away, that did a spiritual ritual on Laris and Ayu's mother because she lost the battle with the demon, to contain the demon within her body, bury her mortal body in a cage, which then we see that her body hasn't deteriorated or anything, presumably because she still has Susuk, right? It's keeping her preserved, which is what I thought. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird, but cool.
Yeah, so while Rufio is attacking the hut that they've been in with his gang and killing the dad, Mr. Damar. Ayu gets away with Laris, who is mostly kind of comatose at this point, but has more or less been deemed a lost cause. Like, they've tried a lot of shit and the demon's not getting out of her. And so Ayu's like, okay, I gotta do the hard thing and bury her in the same grave because the battle is over and, you know, we can't have this thing getting out. So she digs up the mom's grave and then starts trying to put Laris in. And then Laris, of course, fucking like comes back and is herself the first time since mm-hmm. she got assaulted right at the beginning of the movie.
Well, kind of, because a couple times Laris changed to bewitch Armon at one point.
Yeah.
And then the second shaman or the exorcist or whatever. And one funny thing really quickly is it took these men nothing to be bewitched by her. Like she goes from this rotting corpse with festering wounds all over her and terrifying demon. And then she switches just for the illusion of it to bewitch them. And they're like, oh my God, come here and kiss me.
Yeah.
It's just like, these guys are fucking pathetic. Anyhow, go on.
That stuff was fucking creepy too. You know, like them hopping into bed with her. And then you see the reality of the nasty blistered near corpse that they're laying on top of.
So unsettling.
Yeah.
Poor Armando. He was such a devoted friend. He was like, you're reading this wrong. She was normal. I love her.
That was
hard.
But yeah, Laris comes back to herself suddenly, like at the last moment. And Ayu basically has to make the decision to still throw her in the grave and bury her anyways.
Yeah. And somewhere in there, Armand dies.
Oh, yeah. What happens to him?
She rips him apart. She, eats him.
Fuck, that's right.
Oh. Truly, everyone dies. Everybody died but Ayu.
Everybody that dies poor but thing. Ayu.
I really thought Armand was going to make it.
Me too. I really hoped he would.
Poor dude was stabbed by Rufio and then still managed to help her dig. And then they dug the wrong goddamn grave. They dug in the wrong spot and he used all his energy. Right, yeah. And then Laris chewed him up.
Ugh.
Yeah. And then you have, you know, again, we talked about how both these sisters are decent actors and both come off well together. And they nail this scene where Laris is, you know, kind of back to herself. You know, it's absolutely wrenching. And especially the actor who plays Ayu really nails just the absolute angst of that moment. But yeah, then she just buries her and there's a scene of her like looking harrowed as shit in a car, sitting in a car the next day. And that's it.
That was fucking heavy.
I mean, it's very well played. I guess I appreciate the audacity of the bleakness, but sort of like we were saying before we went to the spoiler hut, not 100% sure that I understand why it needed to be that bleak.
Why did everybody have to die? Why did Ayu have to be left alone?
And it's something like where
fucking trauma all by herself.
And it's something where I think, you know, I suspect that the intention behind it is grounded in what they were trying to do thematically. Just, again, I had not a full grasp of what they were doing thematically in this.
Would you have rather there been...
makes a little more sense with more cultural
context. Like a happier ending?
I guess I just needed an explanation or a reason for why it was this dark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just like that. I think after so many lost battles with this demon, I needed a little more catharsis or closure, or not even necessarily a happy ending, but just something that wasn't just, oh, she's herself, but we got to bury her alive anyways. And that's the end of the movie. I don't know. There was a degree to which it felt unnecessarily dark to me. But again, I really think that was they were trying to do something thematically that I probably wasn't fully grasping.
Yeah, it would have been cool if her dad stayed alive and they could have had a relationship, or if Armand could have stayed alive. Like, she did have her own, I'm like reading too much into this, but she had her own career and she had her own life. So she has presumably that to go back to, but truly everyone died. And what is she left with? I agree.
Yeah. Or even if there could be like, just like a cut of her helping somebody else through this based on what she learned. Like how,
like the old ways,
like kind of like that, less, you know, cheesy with how it did that. Yeah. But like, why did she go through all of this and lose everybody she cared for?
Yeah.
To what end, you know? And I understand sometimes that's life. There is no fucking rhyme or reason for why horrible shit happens to good people. But this is a story, like at least give us something.
Well, and you know, I mean, I think probably there's, you know, a decent interpretation is it's just like patriarchy destroys everything.
Yeah, and there's some generational trauma always in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also don't know if it was trying to do something quite that simple, because that does feel a little simple if that's what they were trying to do here. But I mean, regardless, it had an emotional impact on me.
It did.
And, you know, props to it for that.
You know what the part that really got me was when Mr. Damar and IU, like, they have that look right before he knows he's going to basically sacrifice himself to the mom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, obviously, IU just learned recently that he's her real father, but there already was that connection. That moment got me, and I was shocked. I was like, this is new information for me, you know. But whatever emotional magic they did in this film, I got a little choked up at that point.
And he even says to Armand, like, I give you my daughter to protect and Laris, and so sad. And then Armand dies, you know, fighting really bravely to protect them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we do have a good cathartic moment because IU does run Rufio into a fucking tree with her car.
That was solid.
I was like, are they really going to do this? And then I was like, okay, well, good.
I was like, I'm good.
Oh, I was screaming at my television, run him over with your vehicle. And then they did it.
Allison with a Y was doing that too.
Kill him with the car. He has murdered people.
Fuck that guy.
Dude, fuck that guy. Yeah, shockingly, I thought this was great.
You know, it feels like, based on some of the stuff that we've watched, mind you, it's not like we've gone super hardcore into the Southeast Asian horror, you know,
canon.
But they can go pretty hard on the feminist tones. And like really effective, probably because there's so much fucked up shit that happens to women there in some of those places. I mean, there's plenty of fucked up shit that happens to women here too, but there's the very emotionally effective stories some of the ones that we've gotten to watch have been, I think, some of the most emotionally effective when it comes to these stories, particularly about women and the very unique struggles of being a woman in like super patriarchal societies. I don't know. They just...
You're referring to what, this Parvatina?
No.
What's the Indian movie that we watched?
Yes, that's what I'm with thinking the babies. Of.
Kal.
No, not Kal.
No, the one
Kali
with the
Kali Kuli.
Kali Kuli.
Kal was a thematically heavy movie. Oh, Kali Kuhi.
Kuhi.
Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah.
That was with the
infanticide.
That was intense.
That's still one of my favorites that we've watched.
Yeah.
No.
in the foreign film.
But I agreed. The ones we've watched that have hit really hard.
Hit really hard.
That yes. was that one was bleak for very good reasons.
Yeah.
That I understood fully.
Yeah, I continue to be sort of surprised and delighted that this that we get things like the Wheel of Death exists that's picking these movies for us, because I don't think any of us, well, I wouldn't have known to pick this otherwise. And I'm so glad I saw it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Thanks, bummer, Wheel of Death. Like...
Thanks, Wheel. Thanks, Bud.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, we have to figure out what we're watching next, but we have a little program note, a little slight program change to share. We've been hitting the schedule hard since we relaunched the podcast earlier this year. We have put out an episode every goddamn week. And I'm kind of proud of us for that, actually, yeah. because it's been a long time since we had a strict weekly schedule for the cast, and we have not missed a Thursday. But we're a little tired. So we're gonna reduce our monthly output by one episode. Going forward, we're going to do two movie review episodes per month and the horror catch-up episode that we've been doing on a monthly basis as well. So we're just taking one less movie review episode out of the month. Give us all a little more time in our schedules and a little more energy to devote to those other three.
Yeah, and who knows? You know, maybe every once in a while we might drop a bonus
yeah.
episode, do something a little extra fun, but we'll, for our own sanity, go to two movies and a catch up a month.
Yeah.
We're sliding into hibernation season here. So giving ourselves a little grace to deal with the horrors that persist and the horrors that we choose to watch.
Happy Halloween. We're giving you your treat is one less episode a month. No, our treat. It's our treat to it's ourselves. Our treat. It's your trick.
Whoa. You guys hang out too much.
Well, Allison with an I, you're picking next. So what trick or treat are you going to bless us with here?
I am picking a film that I have been curious about, mostly because it's got a really long title. I am the pretty thing that lives in the house.
Oh!
You two sound excited, like you've seen it.
I saw it a while ago.
That was one of the first horror movies you and I watched together.
We watched that together?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Way back in the day.
Whoa.
I've never seen it. It's early Oz Perkins. It might have even been his feature debut. So it's interesting on that level. I remember being a little nonplussed by it, but I'm very curious to revisit it.
I remember liking the aesthetics, and that's all I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks atmospheric. It looks kind of vibey. And it's an hour and 29 minutes, which is the perfect length for a movie we've all decided.
Mm-hmm.
Real quick synopsis is a nervous nurse who scares easily finds herself caring for an ailing horror novelist while living in a house with hidden secrets.
Fun. I'm looking forward to revisiting that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to hear what you guys think on the rewatch, and it'll be my first time.
I'm excited to figure out what I think, because like I said, all I really remember is that I liked the aesthetics.
Yeah. Yeah. If I remember correctly, my problem with it was that the vibes were great, but the vibes were almost the only thing there. But we'll see.
We'll see. Well, that's our review of Susuk at Every Horror Movie on Netflix. But before we go,
we want you to visit our website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. We've got every episode out there that we've ever fucking done. It's a lot. You probably shouldn't listen to them all. You're a crazy ass if you do that. Why are you doing that? But if you want to do that, you can do it on the website. There's also a link to the merch store on there, and you're not a crazy ass at all if you buy our stuff, because we make like 25 whole cents off each t-shirt that you buy. So go do that.
And then you can find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, YouTube, Amoncast, not a momcast. That's a different thing. Ehmoncast. Cast to the TikTok at Amon podcast. You can also find the link to our Discord server in the show notes. Come join there. If you're a mom, if you're an A-mom, you can hop on our new channel for the A-moms. Come find us there.
A-moms. There's one of us so far. And leave us a review anywhere you listen to your podcasts. We like to read them and we appreciate them. And we haven't had one in a while. So do us a solid.
All right. That's it for every horror movie on Netflix. I have been Allison with a Y with my co-hosts.
Patrick.
Allison with an I.
See you next time, folks.
See ya, A-moms. Peace out, A-moms.